world. But to change the world in a way that means anything, it's slow, it's methodical.
Welcome to 2-Bit Encryption, the officially unofficial podcast for Mr. Robot on USA. I'm Jim.
And I'm Aaron.
And today we're talking about Season 2, Episode 8, titled Episode 2.6, Successor.P12. P12? P12? I don't know what that file is.
I went over them all. It's some sort of encryption thing.
Right. I just don't know if it's a GIF, GIF sort of thing for me. They call it P12?
Or P12.
Yeah. If it's a Star Wars droid, they'd call it P12. For sure. what'd you think of this episode?
I actually thought it was great. I think I posted on the forum that it was the first episode this season that I think I kind of wholly loved. I don't know. The first mega episode is pretty good too. But like, and that's not saying I don't have any reservations, because I do have some reservations. Some of them are just, you know, maybe nitpicky, but some I think are kind of structural issues with the season. But I really liked it. I thought that there was genuine tension and genuine stakes, and people, you know, and given the situations they were in, it was interesting to see what they did with the choices they had before them. I actually liked the fact that we got away from Elliot and the constant questioning of, is this real? Is this not real? Right. What'd you think?
I mostly agree. I was surprised halfway through when I realized, hey, Elliot hasn't been in this at all, and I'm kind of riveted.
Wouldn't have happened last season.
Definitely not. It's cool because I do like these other characters.
Yep. And they built up Trenton, Mobley, and Darlene into characters that you actually kind of give a shit about.
Yeah, and they carried off this whole episode by themselves. So and even Sisko. Like, Sisko is becoming someone that I at least find interesting to watch.
Interesting to die.
You think he's dead?
I kind of think he's dead.
Okay. Well, we can talk about that at the end. But yeah, I really liked it. There are some notable exceptions in this episode. Things that I absolutely hate.
Yeah.
But I'm think you guys can predict probably which parts
I'm
those
curious
are.
To see which ones are the ones you hate, which ones... does it involve the untimely return of a certain executioner, madam?
No, it doesn't. Okay. I think that was okay. It does involve her, though.
All right.
Well, then I'm
super curious then.
Okay.
We should get right to it.
Yeah, let's get into the recap. We start off with flashback to when Mobley and Trenton met.
Mobley.
I'm saying Mobley. I'm sticking with it.
It's your Martinez.
I swear they call him Mobley. No?
Several times this episode, they call him DJ Mobley. Mobley.
Yeah, well, what does Dom know? Dom doesn't know anything. So Trenton gets access to Mobley's phone, and then Darlene shows up. They were both there to meet Elliot, but Darlene says he couldn't make it, and instead reads him a statement from Elliot about, you know, typical corrupt, powerful individuals running the world.
This is actually cribbed from the Season 1, Episode 1.
Was it?
Okay. Yeah, voiceovers that he did.
Ah, nice.
Which I thought was a nice... Actually, I thought this was a weirdly nostalgic episode. Like, we're starting it off at Ron's Coffee. Not the same Ron's Coffee. Mm-hmm. They made sure to say that this isn't the child porn nexus, because the Wi-Fi is noticeably shittier.
Right.
Than the one where they're slinging kiddie porn. Uh-huh. But I thought it was great. I liked how they showed that Mobley was taken, like, completely easily socially engineered by... You know, this attractive nerdy girl that he decided to hit on.
Was he the social engineering guy?
I don't think so.
On the team?
It seems like he was the guy who's most responsible, other than Mr. Robot, for the script. I mean, I've seen Darlene do social engineering hacks. I've seen Elliot. I feel like those are the two that brought the thunder on that side of the scale.
Yeah, but like when they're in the van outside of Steel Mountain, and they're like giving Elliot directions, I felt like he was the guy kind of looking everything up and telling him how to proceed.
Okay.
It's ironic that what I view as the social engineering portion of this team would get social engineered.
Yeah. Well, I mean, also he's an awkward, nerdy dude.
It's true. Yeah.
And they kind of tend to be shameless, with a little bit of attention from the opposite sex. Don't know if you've noticed.
Yeah, sure. So there's an
One
ARG.
Of the big problems with our people.
There's an ARG Easter egg thing in this scene.
Oh yeah,
I like every time anybody sees a URL or an IP address, oh, yeah, they go to it.
That this hack site is actually functional.
Right. Well, it's kind of functional. It's a fake benchmarking site. It doesn't actually do much of anything.
You can actually log into the site that Trenton was using, though, where it dumps you to a root at Mobley.
Uh-huh.
Or Mobley, if you will. Terminal. I don't know what you could... Like, I tried a couple of commands. It didn't seem like there was anything there. And I looked this morning on Reddit to see if anyone had blown that wide open.
Didn't seem
like
it.
It just seems like, I mean, there's been...
In a directory, there's a list of restaurants and reviews that he keeps. So yeah. he must be a foodie.
Sure.
Connoisseur.
I mean, you know, he looks like a little chubby. He
All right.
I can feel him on that.
It's a joke about him wanting the pizza.
Sure.
I don't know if he wants the pizza later on to disguise himself as the pizza man, or
I think
if he actually just wants to eat.
He's got a stress eat. Like, I'm under a lot of stress. Right. This is my drug of choice. Like, I get all that. I get all that. They are really lining the pockets of GoDaddy/Dotster, though. I mean, they're just registering sites left, right, and center.
$8.99 a week.
Yeah.
It's just propping them up. But if you go to that site and you take the numbers that don't change on that page, if you load it multiple times, there are some numbers on that page that don't change. And if you take those numbers and you convert them from octal to hex to, you know, the standard
Mr. Robot shuffle, sure.
It takes you to a GitHub repository, which has the stage fright exploit, which is what Trenton used to hack Mobley's phone.
Yeah, stage fright was big. It was one of the really major Android vulnerabilities back in 2014, I think.
Yeah, I don't know. I wasn't really paying attention to it.
I remember it. I still had a day job because it was discussed a lot within the office.
Okay. It's apparently an exploit that involves like MMS video messaging and the way that it processes that you can gain access to their phone.
Right.
But I thought that was kind of neat. Then we go back to a scene we've been.
Oh, before you move on, something else someone noticed, and I don't know that it has any meaning at all, but seeing as this is Mr. Robot, why not? During the Mr. Robot's credit sequence, when it goes over Ron's coffee and it shows Happy Thanksgiving, which kind of gives us a clue about when all this is taking place. Which I guess would be about 7-8 months before the current day.
That
because it's July 4th. It's July 4th. This so
the hack happened 5/9.
Right.
So it's been a couple months.
Right. So there's USA Network Presents at the bottom. The K, all the letters in USA Network are drop shadowed, except for the K. And someone noticed that because it was over a light background, you can actually kind of tell. But people went back and looked, and every single episode, the K is not shadow boxed. Or drop shadowed, rather.
Oh, right.
Now, someone said that that's probably not a production mistake because, you know, as you well know, if you're in Photoshop or Illustrator or After Effects, you would have to literally select that letter and remove the drop shadowing if you did a drop shadowing on all of the...
Depending on how your layers are set up, sure.
Yeah. So I wonder what that might possibly mean, or is that like some really deep clue to something?
I have zero guesses.
But like, it's interesting, and
I suppose
so. It's verifiable.
Right.
So I decided I'd mention it. Why not?
Okay. So we go back to the scene that we've seen the beginning of, where they find out that something big is happening the next day. It turns out that it's an FBI conference call.
Mm-hmm.
They found out about it because of the femtocell stuff, and we're getting a little bit of disassociative timeline here, right? Like, clearly this meeting happened after they planted the femtocell, which I think we know.
Mm-hmm.
There's the Susan Jacobs stuff where she's killed in this episode, but previous episode she missed that meeting. So is that telling us that all of this happens between...
Oh, I never even thought about that, but that makes sense.
I think they're playing a little bit with the timeline.
Huh. So I bet it's like that happened literally at the same time that this is happening right now, because if they emailed her and like, hey, are you coming? They'd gotten the vacation message, which would have let them know definitively one way or another. That's interesting. I didn't suspect that they'd overlay the timeline like this.
Unless she just missed that meeting, but...
It could be that she's just distracted or there's a lot of stuff going on. I mean, it's hard to jump to conclusions, but it seems like, there's definitely something there.
Yeah. So they join up on this call, and then they create an F-Society tape revealing that the FBI is spying on 3 million people under Operation Berenstain. The FBI call also mentioned 16 people under surveillance, one of them dead, and Mobley starts to worry that they're also under surveillance. Finally, at the end of this scene, Susan Jacobs just strolls in the front door, walks up the steps. Whoops.
So we've established that it's been roughly 2 months mm-hmm. since they took over her house.
Yes.
And we talked last week, it started to be conspicuous, like, what the hell?
Mm-hmm.
The one problem I have with this episode, this is this episode's original fucking sin, is it strikes me as implausible that these people, like, I've even been sloppy before with the bullet casing, with the fingerprint on the femto cell, maybe. Uh-huh. Definitely there's something we'll talk about with a dropped videotape here. But to stay in the same spot, ground zero of this hack, for 2 months, and then...
In a dangerous spot,
they try to hang a lampshade on it by saying, oh, we should have paid attention to the GPS.
Right.
No, you should have just fucked off to some other location.
Sure.
Like, and keep moving.
So, they do give a little bit of justification for why Darlene is here. She is kind of secretly hoping that Susan Jacobs will come back. And she'll get to confront her.
Is that a conscious thought, or is that a retrospective right. making good? Because I very much thought that that's like, oh, everybody else is bummed, but I'm super glad you're here. Like, I don't think that was your plan. That's your justification after the fact.
Sure. I could see that.
But then again, maybe, like, if she's secret, but I don't think Mobley is secretly hoping that he gets caught. I don't think Trenton feels that way.
Right. And none of them are calling it out as completely stupid.
Right. You know, I don't know where this is a... I just don't know what to say about that, because it strikes me as implausible that they would do that without keeping tabs on her whatsoever. And the fact that, like we said, how long do you stay away from your very expensive house where you probably pay an arm and a leg for a service? How long do you stay away because your automation went haywire? 2 fucking months, apparently.
Apparently, yeah. And eventually you get fed up and come back.
She's got that nice place in Greenwich. Maybe mm-hmm. that's why, like, I don't have a second home to go to. But I just feel like knowing what I know about rich people and lawyers and whatnot, that, you know, hell hath no fury, like, wanted out of their house for 2 months because of some bullshit IT nerd shit.
My second house doesn't have a pool. Not an indoor one, anyway. I can't use this shit.
Like, I developed the event coordination software for the Indianapolis Bar Association. Uh-huh. Lawyers are the least put up with any kind of IT bullshit in the world, man.
Huh.
Like, I've also worked at the other worst, doctors.
Oh,
I wrote
yeah.
some medical software. Like, none of them give a shit about any. So, like, I don't know. That was a problem for me.
Okay. I don't necessarily have a huge problem with that. I think at the very least they should, I mean, in 5 seconds here I could set up a GPS alert that will send me a notification if I get within a certain range of my house.
Sure.
Why the fuck didn't they set that up for her? Look, she's outside the front door. Oh, I got a text message.
Right.
It says, here comes Susan Jacobs.
Again, if you make the decision to just
right.
use
if
her
you make
house
that dumb decision,
as your fortress of solitude for 2 months, then yes.
Then take some precautions, my God.
And these aren't just regular people. These are world-class hackers.
Right.
So I think that, yeah, this was all kind of bunk, man. But where they go from it here, I thought was super interesting. So one of the big theories I thought was interesting is that they keep on saying there's 17 under surveillance, one's deceased.
Mm-hmm.
That makes Mobley go off on the
Romero yeah.
angle. A lot of people said, well, why? That's an assumption he made. They could be talking about Gideon, because we know he was
sure.
being questioned.
He
and
was.
He's now, the FBI is definitely involved in the Romero thing, but do you think that maybe this is Mobley being paranoid? Because he also got picked up at the end of the episode, but they had nothing on him.
Yeah, I don't know, because, I mean, Dom specifically mentions Romero in this episode. It's not like they don't know that one of his friends is dead.
Sure.
Do they know of any connection between Romero? I mean, They've got to. They had a special team in there investigating his computers, although their team sucks.
Well, that wasn't an FBI team. That was just New York.
Right, but Dom was on the scene. She knew about the investigation. Like, she knows that Romero's involved in some
Shit.
Yeah,
but whether... I mean, I think it's more likely that Mobley's correct, but it would be an interesting possibility, and with Gideon's death and the fact that he was under FBI investigation, that gives enough a wiggle room that maybe they'll do something interesting with that. The fact that, you know, they're shitting their pants and running around like their heads on fire when the FBI is really not as clued into them. Because think about all the other people they might be looking at, all the Dark Army folks that we don't even know about.
Right.
Like 16 people, that's a hell of a lot more than just F Society. So, I mean, even if you throw on all the bull castrators, that's still not 16 people. I just thought it was interesting that maybe this is a mistaken identity thing and Mobley has just enough information to freak the fuck out about.
Yeah, could be. The other really interesting thing in this scene is the tape that Darlene records here, because she, for some reason, just pulls off her mask.
On camera, for fuck's sake.
They're using this old VHS recorder,
right?
This, like, broadcast camera or something, and which I think is fairly smart. That thing's not going to get hacked.
Yeah.
It doesn't have any outside connections.
And people are posting on Reddit. I don't know the truth of this, but it makes sense. I know there's something similar in the printers where, like, if you print a document, there is some kind of,
if you
examine it under a microscope or in a certain lighting, it gives you information about the serial number, and they can track that shit down.
Yeah.
That's how, like, they caught serial killer, or there's, like, some terrorists have been busted because of that. I've heard that you can, that, like, essentially the digital noise with a, the light sensing diode that's the main sensor for an electronic camera. The noise pattern is essentially a fingerprint. They're unique to every single one. And that if you get, you have to have the original device, because it's not like there's any big repository.
Right.
Same with fingerprints. You have to have the original. You have to have access to someone's phone or camera. But if you do, you can conclusively prove that a picture was taken or a video is shot. Obviously, with analog stuff, you can't do that. So.
Right.
I think it is, like, it's a stylistic thing, because, you know, Darlene, this whole started with the VHS tape.
Certainly, yeah.
And the mask, I think that's cool, but also there's some practical reasons why you do that. Now, you just forget all OPSEC when the fucking thing has a fart or a burp and just rip your mask off on camera. Sure, why not?
Right, and then you take that tape, you set it on a table, and you let it drop to the ground underneath the curtain where you probably aren't going to find it if you forget about it. Like, this is coming back.
Oh, yeah.
In a big way, just like this bullet casing did.
And that's the thing, like, I, on the one hand, that's stupid, but on the other hand, like, it wasn't like the first couple seasons of Breaking Bad, you're like, oh, I can't believe Walt and Jesse are making these obvious criminal mistakes. These people aren't criminals, they're hackers.
Right.
And even when they do their full site wipe down, they leave fucking bullet shells casings. When they do the full wipe down of this place, they're not going to get every single fingerprint and hair follicle and dead skin cell or whatever else.
Right.
I just feel like they're not good at crime, and that's part of the story. This isn't plot holes or them being stupid. It's just people that are not criminals trying. They're smart, but they're just not as good at covering all the tracks that need to be covered.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I don't really have a problem with it. We still haven't gotten to the part that I have major problems with.
I'm getting curiouser and curiouser because, honestly, we're starting to tick off the things I thought might set you off.
Okay. All right. There are a couple more.
All right.
Let's go to the next scene, because we might start ticking those boxes here.
Okay.
Angela's at a karaoke bar. She runs into Steve, who's a friend of her dad's. He starts giving her some shit about working at Evil Corp. She returns it by calling him a failure of a 60-year-old shit cleaner. I could not even watch this scene a second time. I so viscerally hate Angela at this point.
Really?
I think Angela is one of the most disgusting characters I've seen on TV.
Why?
Because she claims to be doing all of this, or the show, I guess, is claiming that she's doing all of this for some kind of altruistic reason.
Okay.
It's to get revenge for her mother, to get justice for her mother's death.
Right.
None of her actions are saying that anymore. And I don't know... I'm having a hard time telling what they're trying to do with her.
How can you say that when she just got into position to be kind of like...
Why is she shitting all over Steve?
Because Steve's being an asshole.
But
like,
she shits all, she's a secret agent. Why does she shit all over her dad? Like, I don't understand anything that Angela is doing.
Well, like, my only theory is that she's trying somehow to protect her father.
Why is she fucking this old guy at the bar? None of this makes sense.
Okay, sure. Like, you're eventually going to get a layer, or you're going to get to a layer where I'm like, fuck if I know. But I also think that's, you know, people react to trauma and damage all kinds of different ways. Mm-hmm. And she might, maybe, she thinks she's under surveillance, and she's trying to play this game with Price, so she's going after old men to, she just rejected. I don't know. I see some sketches of things that might be true, but she's playing this character completely impenetrably. Like, when Steve was going at her, and she just looks at him with this, like, Like she's trying to remember where she put her keys. Like, she left her keys and, like, okay, where's the last place? And he starts to walk away, and she's like, you're a plumber. Mm-hmm. I mean, in isolation, that makes sense. Because, like, say you're a secret agent, and you're working for the U.S. government to bust up in the Ruskies or whatever you're going to, or ISIS or whatever. And someone comes up, and your cover is something that's kind of loathsome. And someone comes up in your private life and, like, calls you on it. Mm-hmm. You can't say, well, look, fucker, I'm a patriot, and I'm actually going to bring this whole system down. But if you're, you know, maybe you fucking go at him with what you do know just to make yourself feel better. I feel like Angela has been in this position where, you know, her parents, I mean, look at all the crazy shit Darlene and Elliot does, and we just kind of roll with it.
Mm-hmm.
But Angela has a weird affect and fucks old dudes and are like, oh, this is a line. I mean, I'm not saying you're wrong.
The things
but
don't
I,
seem to be
weird.
Tied together to me. Like, I don't know why she's fucking old dudes. I don't know why she's so shitty to everyone in her life now.
Hmm.
Like, you don't have to go and rub your dad's face in this stuff. Just don't talk to him.
Like I said,
if you don't want him to be part of this, don't talk to him. Don't go and fuck up his day.
Yeah, but I mean, you would, you know, a dad like that might follow you and demand answers or show up in inopportune
times.
Then you
do it. You don't go out of your way to say fuck you, dad.
Like I said, she's throwing rocks at old Yeller is what she's doing.
Yeah, I absolutely just hate this character. I do not like anything about Angela at this point. I think it's actually. What they're doing is a poorly written, like, seduction of power and money here.
It's attempt of a good character to resist all those.
Right. I think it's poorly written. Her actions are schizophrenic.
Because I think what she's doing is kind of interesting, and I don't understand it, but it's like a hell of a lot better than fucking Tyrell Wellick or Joanna.
Is it?
Yes. Is it? Yes. Fuck yes.
No, I actually disagree with that. I dislike Angela's
role in
this.
So picking up old dudes at bars.
No, that's not
it. Is weird. Is less explicable than beating up homeless people. And
at least I understood Tyrell's motivation.
Did you?
Yes, Tyrell Wellick was looking for power and money.
Okay,
that was his motivation. Angela, I don't fucking know anymore.
She's trying to take. I mean, come on, she is trying to take down E-Corp. Like, that is explicit. Like, we have figured that out.
Is she at this point? Is she?
Yes.
I'm not sure of that. Like I said, I think it's a poorly written. Someone. Trying to cope with this idea of power and money being tempting.
Okay.
While at the same time, like, you know, wanting to do what they set out to do in the beginning, but not sure they can do it anymore. And I just think it's bad. I don't think it's good at all.
Okay. Well, I disagree, but I think reasonable people can. So,
sure.
What else do we...
I don't know that there's a lot more to talk about. She's dating some dude from who we later find out is from the FBI.
Right. This Andre character is based on a real life security consultant who is a handsome black man himself named Andre.
Oh, they did this before.
Where they like do little winks towards real life characters that are on the fringe of the story. This was kind of a wink to a white hat hacker who I did the research and I wrote it down, but I can't find it in my notes what he's actually known for, but. It's another little Easter egg for security folks.
All right.
Hacker folk.
Anything else? You think Steve's a failure because he's a 60-year-old plumber? That's the other part of it that's a fuck you, Angela, because I...
Well, that's the thing. Like, you know, anytime you get into this...
What are
like,
you going to do when your toilet breaks, Angela?
What
the fuck are you going to do?
Well, I mean, it's
shove
like...
your hands in there?
All the problems with these kind of dick measuring contests is like, well, okay, you're measuring length, I'm measuring girth. Who's got the bigger pussy pleaser? I don't know.
It's how you use it.
I I just feel like, yeah, it's like, well, you know, does he judge work satisfaction and money as the end-all be-all? Or is he like, I got a good family and I can sleep at night? And,
right.
Everyone measures success differently. So it's always amusing when you see characters try to... But it does seem like it does wound him.
Sure, yeah.
And also, like, what is this fucker doing? Like, So if me and my son are having a fight and I confide in one of my friends and, you know, we're having outs and then he runs in my son later at a bar and just, like, eviscerates him, I'd be pissed at the dude. Like, what is this your fucking business? I don't need you to get involved in a fight with my child.
Right.
Like, fuck you, dude. So fuck him.
Yeah,
fuck
no,
Steve.
Fuck him, too.
He's probably a piece of shit.
Mostly fuck Angela, but fuck him, too.
Yeah. There's enough fucks for everybody in this episode.
Yep. So Darlene ties up Susan, and they scramble to try to figure out what the hell to do. Susan's making a racket, so Trenton goes to shut her up, and Susan accidentally bashes her head on the wall, which is the other part of this that I have a problem with.
Why do you have a problem with it? I mean, that's... shit happens, man.
Yeah, but I don't... It just wasn't convincing.
My thing is, as soon as Trenton... I knew it was coming because this person, they made it very clear that she's physically capable. She jogs, she swims, she's physically fit. I don't think these nerds do.
No.
And as soon as she let her go, I'm like, oh, she's just going to beat the shit out of you, man.
Yeah.
She's going to, like, you might be a black hat bitch, but she probably knows Aikido or something.
Sure.
It actually made me laugh out loud when she went to do it and, like, Trenton just kind of pivoted to get out of her way and she mad dogged herself into the wall.
Right. I mean,
but I feel like that's something that, I mean, that happens in, like fights. And Mr. Robot's trying to do this kind of realism thing where, you know, you're expecting a Hollywood fight, and what's going to happen is when people, untrained fighters, fight and, you know, shit goes bad.
Yeah, it was that expectation I had of her being, you know, physically capable to some degree
versus the computer nerd.
Right. But it was that expectation that made me not like when she just kind of I don't even know what her plan was. Was she going to ram head first into Trenton? The idea?
I think she was, like, trying to... Yeah, it looked like she was trying to bull rush her, and she just didn't count on her shifting her weight the way it does. And the way they filmed it is very chaotic, so it's like, I went and watched it a couple times. I couldn't tell you exactly what happened, whether she tripped in the last minute, but she's also... Like,
I guess that's my problem.
She's been sitting this seated, cramped position, which they played up the second time around she got up. So, like, it's one of those things where maybe her legs were fucking asleep. When she went to, because she's, I don't.
Maybe her pacemaker skipped a beat.
Maybe her pacemaker skipped a beat. You don't know. You don't know.
You're right. I don't.
I just didn't have a problem with that. Yeah. I thought it was an interesting subversion of what I thought was going to happen.
It wasn't a huge problem, but, you know.
Also,
it was pretty annoying.
If I was Trent, and I'd be like, why do I get all the bitch work? Like, you guys are going to sit up here and decide what's going to happen, and I'm going to go shut this woman up? What the fuck? You go shut her up.
Yeah. I feel like they sent the smallest person to go shut her up, although they didn't expect her to fucking untie her.
Yeah, that's the other thing.
Which is the classic mistake, and that was another part where I was just rolling my eyes. Like, really, you're going to untie her? Let her shit her pants. No one cares.
Again, I feel like that's where, like, Trenton just, like, all of them are soft in different ways.
But the problem is I've seen this in television and movies so many times.
Sure.
Like, it wasn't a surprise at all.
Very rare, like Breaking Bad Season 1 is one of the things where I think they got it. Like, that's, like, for a reasonable, average, intelligent person, like, that's how you would deal with this kind of improvised hostage situation, you know?
Yeah, that was great.
And maybe Sam doing all the writing and directing and pulling it all in, we're seeing the limits of what you can do. But
maybe there are some other really amazing scenes in this episode.
None of this stuff really bothered me. I thought it's like, okay, I didn't know this about Trenton's character, but it tracks clean that, and like Mobley says, like, you know, maybe you shouldn't have ever gotten into this. And I also think they're all soft in different ways. Like, you know, Darlene seems like she's soft. Her soft spot is her brother. And, like, trusting the people that are close to her. Mobley seems like his
pizza.
Pizza and paranoia, the two P's, will get you every time.
Yeah.
And Trenton just, like, she loves her family too much, and maybe she's got too much respect for her fellow men.
Yeah.
And women.
Yeah. Well, she has the baggage of her family, too, you know? It's something she can't just abandon.
Right.
So, who knows? Anyway, Darlene decides that they can't take her to the hospital until they know that she won't talk. So they set out to own her, as they call it.
Mm-hmm. Pwn.
While Angela
believe they didn't say it pwn.
Right.
But a pwner.
While Angela sings "Everybody Wants to Rule the World" at the karaoke bar, and they kind of intercut between the two. And I did find that really mesmerizing. I mean, that song, her singing, it was a good scene.
When they started off her, I'm like, oh, you're going to try to Homeward Bound me?
Right.
You are not going to fucking try to Homeward Bound me. If this is 2.5 minutes of Angela singing this, I'm going to be... But somehow...
For people who don't know, Homeward Bound is a reference to The Leftovers, where Kevin Garvey does this same thing.
This improbably emotional... Like, it's devastating.
Completely crushing.
Yeah.
To all of your emotional centers.
Yes. And it's, like, such an... You can't do it. Like, it's kind of like how The Leftovers got a little bit of shit for doing the Where Is My Mind after Mr. Robot did it. So now, like, I don't know if the Sim Esmail's doing that as a... reverse homage, since they both kind of highly regard each other's shows, but I was like, mm-hmm. Oh man, this is not going to go well. But the way they intercut it with, you know, because Kevin Garvey singing Homeward Bound, it was just him in a spotlight for 2.5 minutes,
yep.
Daring you to rip your eyes away. This, they cut the hacking and their increasingly desperate attempts to find any dirt on this woman,
yeah,
who seems like she's the, you know, virtuous, vicious.
Seemed
corporate.
Like it, but she wasn't, right? I mean, they found that Yahoo account, and I take Darlene at her word that she's got some kind of
email thing with the judge, it wasn't relationship.
Sure,
but it wasn't like that's like you're going to get slapped on the wrist by the bar. It's not like it's going to ruin your life enough to blackmail you properly, probably, is the way I read it.
Okay.
But just this, you know, I thought that in the context, it was pretty effective, and it's got Angela singing about making the most of freedom and pleasure in a world where everything's crumbling down, mm-hmm. and like, you know, it suits like the emotional state of these people that are reduced to trying to blackmail this woman to try to not have to kill her and make I thought the song choice and Angela's effect and the action underneath came together to where it's not as good as The Leftovers, but
yeah,
it didn't shame itself at all.
No, it was a good scene.
And Portia Doubleday, is that her name? I thought she was actually kind of, as you said, mesmerizing.
Mm-hmm.
Something about how she was playing it. I did think, it's like, what would you think if you're in the audience and you're seeing this girl do this?
Uh-huh. What does Steve think? Is Steve still back there drinking a Budweiser?
Because
he's
know.
A plumber. He obviously must drink shit beer, right, Angela?
I know what one guy, Duck Phillips, is in the audience saying, there's some damage I can get in on.
Write that That's, in, Duck Phillips.
Yes.
I forgot about that.
Yep. I'm going to offer a drink and shit on her boss's desk. That's what I'm going to do. For you don't know, the old guy that she hits on is a fairly infamous character on Mad Men.
Right. And she does that right now. After she sings, she goes and hits on this old guy, invites him to stick around, and I guess he does. I'm going to say he does.
I don't know. Answer unclear. I mean, you do not... This guy is a fairly famous, you know, character actor on television. I don't think you hire him for 30 seconds of work. So
probably not.
I'm judging what's going on based purely... I mean, that's...
It's meta.
That's meta, but, like, Seppenwald did it, and that's... He's kind of like... And it seems like he's almost always right.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if it's an actor of note, it's not just, like, an extra, then... You're going to see him again.
Yeah.
Because else, why the hell would you pay and bring that guy on?
Yeah.
So.
All right, we go over to Dom, who was talking to this Wall Street guy.
By the way, I know you had a lot of antipathy about that. One thing I want to say about the scene is, imagine this scene if you actually did connect with Angela.
Right.
Like,
it would have been amazing.
Yeah, and that's the thing.
A lot of people are connecting with Angela, which I don't understand, and they were saying this is... just a brilliant scene, an amazing scene. And I don't totally agree because I don't like
That's
Angela.
What I'm saying. Like, I think that if you did actually connect with her character and was more plugged in, that this would be just, like, really phenomenal. Still not good as, I don't think, The Leftovers, but what are you going to do? It's the best. It was last year's best show on television.
Yeah. So Dom talks to the Wall Street guy that Darlene took the gun from. She has used the micro stamp on the casing to link the bullet to his gun, and she wants the name of the person who used it.
Mm-hmm. Is he going to give up Darlene? He looks like he's going to give up Darlene.
Yeah, he looks like a guy who would just not want
to deal. Why would
deal.
Like, because Darlene was just kind of you know, hookup for him.
Yeah,
why
would he
go?
Nothing to do with it. Just, right. It's an illegal gun. He's probably gonna have to pay a fine or something.
Sure.
But, you know, other than that, he just doesn't want the hassle.
Right.
Yeah, Darlene might be in trouble here. Although,
Everyone's in trouble here.
Well, like, everyone is in trouble, right? Does he actually know Darlene's name?
I don't know.
Her real name?
Like if she's, you know, Lolita 69 or something to him.
Right.
Or whatever she would be known as.
Yeah, she goes by her Tinder name or something.
Sure.
Although
sure.
You have to hook Facebook up to that, don't you?
Surely not.
Don't you?
I would think Tinder would never take off if you had to hook up your Facebook
right?
account to
That's
it.
What I would think, too. anyway, we're pretty sure that's the bullet that killed Tyrell, right?
It's the bullet that shot
Tyrell's
into
dead.
Tyrell.
So you think he was shot but not killed?
Mr. Robot, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like last week, Mr. Robot said, I shot him, not I killed him.
And I
think that's a significant omission.
Okay. Did Elliot go with them to the pound or the vet or wherever they burned
no,
those hard drives
in the first season? He was either in Tyrell's SUV or maybe already in jail by that time.
Right. Okay. And they probably didn't burn Tyrell's body in that thing. I was trying to think if like there's any way they can...
I don't think they know anything about Tyrell.
Yeah, probably not.
It would have,
okay.
If they do and it hasn't come up in all this conversation, then fuck you, Sam Esmail.
Right.
I got a preemptive middle finger for you.
Okay. Anything else to say about this Wall Street dude?
Should we move on? Don't think so. You talking about Duck?
No. No.
Oh yeah. The guy with the gun. Sure. No.
Yeah. Okay. So Darlene pays a visit to Susan.
Oh, one thing I want to mention is because right here is a roundabout an ad drop. You're not watching it live, mm-hmm. right? I noticed that, like, you know, we talked about the fact that the numbers are not great. I noticed that there's a sharp decline, at least in our market, of the ads they're showing. Like, they're showing, like, local gutter repair dudes.
With, like, plumbers.
Even worse, gutters. They don't have enough, they don't have enough guts to get up there into shit. They're just, like, right. scooping leaves. That's, you know, that's shit on training wheels.
Oh, man.
And also... this bizarre commercial from the OKI Institute, which is like this Ohio, Kentucky, Indiana consortium, urging people to carpool. And the example that it uses is some lady went up and was like, hey, Miss So-and-so, do you need to get your medicine? Because I got to go to the supermarket. And I'm like, in what universe would I ever go up to some
random old
person I live next to and offer to pick up their medicine? Like
I don't know. Like
it was just a weird. You not
she
like
live in Little House in the Prairie or something.
yeah, man. I don't. Or if you're a different type of outgoing person than I am.
Yeah.
But the commercials were not a lot of national spots.
Hmm.
So you know they've renewed it. I'm not worried about it. It's just like it seems like Mr. Robot really is a lost leader for this show.
Yeah.
Or this network. Yeah.
Every show I'm covering now is a lost leader.
Is it?
Game of Thrones is not. But
yeah, I was going to say.
But yeah, I'm doing Halt and Catch Fire, so that's also...
Yeah, what that Game of Thrones is the opposite. It's it's a gain loser, whatever that means.
Nailed it. So Darlene goes to the pool room where Susan's sitting. She tells Susan that she knows about the, I guess, sexy emails that she's been trading with this judge.
Yep.
And reveals that she also remembers Susan laughing about E-Corp being cleared of any wrongdoing in her dad's case from when she was 4 years old. I'm not sure if she actually remembers it or if this is some kind of false memory.
I bought it. She probably did.
Maybe. So Susan asks what next, and Darlene tases her in the heart.
Mm-hmm.
Boom. Falls into the pool.
Which they did. Oh, they did. Oh. Do you like some fries with this analysis? They did do a pretty good job at foreshadowing that. During the Tears for Fears hacking session, there was lots of emails that they showed from her doctor about...
Right, so I saw those emails. There's no way Darlene didn't see them.
And I was
wondering... You're not fooling anyone, Darlene.
Because you watched Homeland, didn't you?
No. Well, part of it, but not...
Okay, I think in season two, they hacked the defense, the head of the DOD's pacemaker...
Okay.
And killed him. And I guess that's based on like something that like really could happen. And there was like this big famous financial scandal where the Black Hats found out. And instead of releasing it to the company that it could be exploited, they actually went to their competitor and said, hey, we can get the stock thing where we can all buy, essentially pump and dump this stock and then release it, and it's going to destroy the stock and like all this stuff. It was interesting. But I thought that's where they were going. Like, oh, they're going to fucking hack her pacemaker.
Yeah.
Let her go. She's going to walk down the street and just collapse on the street and, but no, they didn't. They didn't. They tased her right
in the heart. So, like, a lot of people were saying, they're really going off the deep end with this pacemaker stuff.
Right.
They're like, when you incinerate a body, a pacemaker explodes. I saw that same shit. And there are serial numbers on pacemakers. Yep. And they're going to find it and trace it back to Darlene. No.
I don't think so.
Sorry, this is just here to let us know why Susan Jacob dies when she's tased.
I mean, you all can have that opinion.
Right, I'm not buying it.
Yeah.
This is here as a storytelling device.
Right.
To let us as the audience know that tase was fatal.
Right. Yeah. And again, like, yes, it exploded, but it's not going to blow up the fucking facility. I've seen what happens when a lipo blows up. It's not like grenade level, okay? Mm-hmm. And you're already in a steel box that it's like 2,000 degrees.
Not like you pulled the battery out of a Terminator.
No. No.
It's not going to level a city block.
No, it's not anything like that. And the thing is like the other thing you don't know, like I feel like just a lot of people don't know about cremation. Is that usually the cremator doesn't like get rid of even the large pieces of bone. There has to be a pulverizing and then
right.
So like unless they just like shove the body in there and like peace out, which why would they do that? They probably stayed around, and if there was some electronic device that had serial numbers that were legible through that and conflagration,
grab it.
They got rid of it.
Right.
So I mean, I will be shocked if that is what ends up busting them.
Me too. So we're already talking about this. Darlene tells the others that Susan's dead and tries to act like it was self-defense. Mobley doesn't buy it at all. Darlene tells Mobley and Trenton to leave.
Oh, you didn't think you thought Mobley didn't believe her?
Yeah.
I thought he did. Like he was
believe
kind
her about
of,
what? What are you talking about?
That she didn't mean to kill her.
Oh, you thought he did?
Yeah, I thought his affect was like, oh God, you didn't know that this would be catastrophic, or is kind of...
I don't think he bought it.
I mean, I can see why you think that, but I still think that it's more like he was just like, oh my God, I can't fucking believe this is one more thing.
Right. So Darlene tells them to leave, and her and Sisko will take care of the body.
So you're Mobley, or Mobley, as you like to call him.
Yeah, I'm Mobley.
And Darlene and Sisko tell you to fuck off, we'll clean up. Mm-hmm. What's your reaction?
My reaction, so I'm operating under the idea that Mobley thinks Darlene meant to kill her.
Uh-huh.
I might get the fuck out of there and never come back, because I might do exactly what Mobley does here.
You trust these two to clean up?
No, but I don't trust them not to kill me either.
Because
I think she's just cold-blooded murdered somebody.
Huh. Okay.
And I'm also suspicious that they're trying to cover their tracks by killing the others around them. Him and Trenton included.
But wouldn't the fact that they're trying to get you out of there kind of assuage that? And that's the other thing is like it's funny how the interpretation you've got has completely informed your worldview, because I'm like you're so sloppy that you just fucked this thick stuff up and now you want me to let you handle this.
Right.
Nah, I'm going to stick around and wipe fingerprints and do whatever as well.
Right.
I want to be in on what the hell you guys are doing, because I want to make sure this... Or I get the hell out and go to Belize. I guess that's the other thing you could do.
Yeah. I really just do like all of the feelings of paranoia coming from Mobley here.
I do.
Like,
I do, too.
Because he has good reason.
Like,
A,
he's got Dark Army, at FBI, and if you buy your theory, Darlene
even
and
Darlene
Sisko,
herself,
sure.
And maybe Elliot. Like, he doesn't know. He hasn't talked to Elliot.
Sure.
So... I really feel his paranoia when they're sitting in the subway and people are walking by. It's like I'm kind of right there with both of them, and I think it's really effective.
Well, and I also think that Darlene, like, because we see her in this moment, and when she finally kills her, and like she takes this like deep shaky breath, and they had this conversation had later, like I didn't know I was capable of that. I thought all that stuff was really really good.
Mm-hmm.
That felt like very very genuine, and you don't
it did,
see.
Yeah.
A lot of that outside of like Breaking Bad, where
it's usually more black and white. This is really complex. It's like I didn't even really understand myself.
And they play out these suspicions and paranoias between the group throughout the rest of the episode. I thought it was really that's the best part of this episode.
Yeah.
everything that happens after Madam Executioner dies.
So in this scene, Darlene also sets up an automatic reply on Susan Jacobs' email,
sure.
An autoresponder. She sets it for 20 days, so they've got a 20-day window here where presumably no one will find her.
That's bullshit.
Yeah.
She's their chief legal counsel. She's not going to go on a three-week vacation and Philip Price,
without
like,
telling anyone.
Oh, yeah. The fuck she is.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's not. I mean, I wonder what the police would do.
What do you mean?
You know, like, if you went to the police and she's missing.
Right.
She would never go off on a three-week vacation. The police, I could see it in a world in which police is like, well,
her
they did.
Says, yeah.
But on the other hand, we already know that Philip Price kind of owns NYPD, so I don't.
Right.
I don't know how to calibrate, like, how effective of a shield is this. I think it's going to buy him a couple days, not the full 3 weeks.
Probably. I'm with you on that. I actually emailed Susan's eCorp.
Sure.
USA.com address. I sent the message. I doubt anyone will ever read this. I'm probably talking into the void here.
Did you send her a dick pic?
No.
God
I did
damn
not.
It. I keep it, telling you that's not the way you introduce yourself to people.
It was the nipple pic. Yeah, just
sure.
pinching them. No, I said I need another copy of the notes for Monday's meeting because I think it's Friday. I think it's Friday, July 4th because they set it for the 7th. For Monday's meeting, my dog ate my copy. Took him to the pound yesterday, so it won't happen again. And you get back the auto response from their servers that Darlene typed, which is pretty cool.
Did you then email the legal hotline?
I did not, no.
Because it sends back a, we're currently busy fulfilling all these 5-9 requests,
right.
And we'll get
yeah.
back. It's like, it's essentially just endless runaround.
Sure.
By the way, you mentioned the dog at the pound. I thought it was kind of a nice touch that the pound incinerator guy made mention of them letting all the dogs go and then they're all back.
Right.
Like, you know, here again, something you thought was going to free people didn't do shit.
Also, maybe a slight nod to Leftovers again?
Oh.
Maybe?
Yeah.
I'm not
okay.
sure. There was some weird
that.
Dog shit going on in that, too.
Yeah, sure, sure.
But yeah, it was nice that they didn't just gloss over that, right?
Yeah, and I think it's also nice and thematic, so.
Yeah. So Mobley and Trenton are talking about what just happened in the subway. Mobley tells
her,
and
this is why I think you're wrong about your interpretation, because they actually have the conversation where Trenton's like, it has to be self-defense, right? And Mobley kind of thinks, and he nods, and I don't know why he would nod yes if he truly thought that Darlene was a killer. Like, why would he pander to?
I don't know that he's agreeing with her. I think he's just acknowledging how naive she is.
Really,
like.
Wow. Okay.
These are the people I'm dealing with here.
Okay.
Yeah, it's definitely an interpretation.
Well, I mean, yeah, I and I can't poke a hole into it because it's just completely the opposite of mine.
Right.
But
right.
I see where you're going with it.
Okay. He tells her that they can't stay here and he boards a train. They've got this line here where he says, what we did was colossally fucking stupid. We can't afford not to realize that anymore.
This is why I like Mobley. Mobley's a pragmatist. He's a realist.
Yeah, it seems like he's kind of changed his mind on this whole thing.
I mean,
at this point, I don't know if it's from a personal perspective or a societal perspective, but
I admire the intellectual. That's the thing. Like, when do you give up on an idea, a good idea?
Right.
Because it's entirely possible that good ideas end disastrously for reasons of execution and not having complete. I tend to respect people that instead of doubling down, like, you know, Darlene and these people are almost in a case of denial. It's like, you know what? We need to cut and run on this whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, sometimes that doesn't go well. You know, the world is complex and full of shades of gray.
It's true.
I wish we could all just acknowledge that as adults instead of getting into endless kindergarten food fights about everything.
Yeah. So Cisco wants to leave Susan's body in the pool, but Darlene's worried that their people will come back and find it. Instead, she decides to pack Susan up in a suitcase, take her down to the pound, and incinerate the body.
It's the little shades of the Americans.
Right?
You know, where they broke down the Swedish diplomat, I think, and shoved her in a suitcase.
Yep.
Pretty fucking brutal.
It is. We don't see it here. We see a bit of the unpacking, but
and
no crunching of bones.
What Cisco's talking about, is this the point where you're going to start suggesting acid and wood chippers, which
yeah.
call to mind Breaking Bad and Fargo, both of the kind of its peer, dramatic peers. I thought that was interesting. Lots of callbacks to other shows in this.
Yeah. So on the way back, Darlene says that she doesn't feel bad about what she did to Susan, but she actually thought something would stop her from doing it when the time came. But it didn't, which surprises her.
She also paid for Susan's funeral with the her cold storage bitcoins.
Yeah. How smart do you think that is?
So
using a cryptocurrency that E-Corp developed.
But when I hear cold storage, I think she printed off...
Oh, okay, like a locker sort of thing.
Yeah, so like right. You literally like hold you when you refer to bitcoins. So bitcoins are like on the internet, but you can also take like these QR codes and you can literally print them out and like put them in a safety deposit. Now that's both highly secure and also incredibly dangerous because if that thing burns up, it's like a bearer's bond. If that thing,
now it's a physical thing, like a dollar bill,
gets destroyed
can get
or stolen. And the thing about the cold storage aspect is, it's once it gets to that paper, it's literally untraceable. Mm-hmm. Like unless they get your fingerprints on the paper or whatnot. And the way she did it, where she looks like she had a picture of that QR, and the guy took a picture of that picture. Like I question how traceable that actually is.
Right.
So it could, I mean, maybe, I don't know, sometimes on the show I'm a little confused of how much they know and like how, I mean, it's, they get a lot of stuff right, but they also kind of make mistakes either for, you know, to make the flow better, like we talked about Mobley, instead of training Angela to hack, he would probably just give her a script to run.
Uh-huh. So. Although somebody tweeted at me, I think, and said that a script would leave some evidence because the script would be on the thing, whereas if you type in the command itself, it doesn't actually leave. You can wipe evidence.
Why couldn't you
wipe the command?
Why couldn't you wipe the script?
Well, a script can't wipe itself, can it?
Why wouldn't it be able to?
Like totally last, delete itself?
The last line of it.
Mangus doesn't have to delete itself.
I don't know whether it would get it, since it's open and in use, it would. I'd have to try that.
But I'm sure you can overwrite that, maybe. I don't know.
Sure.
But there's some possibility as to why they used it, but still, it doesn't make a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
So I really like the scene, especially when they get to the pound. Like, I'm definitely in the moment with them, like especially with Cisco, where Darlene has kind of just killed this woman.
He's like, this is some traumatizing shit. You know that. That was a great line.
Like, I'm doing this for you.
Yeah.
You need to realize how big of a thing this is for me.
And like the fact that they just watched the body burning, I thought that was kind of like, that's why I'm like, I don't buy the pacemaker theory, because someone that would sit there and watch the body burn, I think, is in there for the long haul.
I think so. Yeah. And didn't the guy at the place there say something about them taking hours?
Yeah.
Or leaving a mess, maybe. So maybe they don't clean up.
But I think that when...
Or was it the dogs?
I think that's what he's talking about, making a mess.
Yeah.
I
love his delivery of the line when he looks at the suitcase, like, what the fuck is in there?
Right.
Like,
right.
Perfect delivery by that guy.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not just talking about Cisco, you know, burning this body with her, but, like, trying to decide what to do here. Also about the body in the pool.
Sure.
Like this is an oh shit kind of moment in your plan. Something you totally didn't expect. And maybe Darlene didn't expect it to happen or want it to happen.
Right.
Cisco certainly didn't.
And he's got the Dark Army to worry about.
Right.
Like the FBI, maybe they know him, maybe not. Dark Army definitely knows about him. Just broke a needle off in his fucking finger, which, you know, he's got the bandage on this, so they haven't forgotten that. I find it hard to fault the guy for trying to come up with a third path at the end.
Sure.
Like, I get it, Darlene, you got to do what you got to do once you find out about it, but it doesn't seem like a crazy reaction to have.
So we go over to Mobley, who has paid a pizza guy to check out his apartment before going inside. The guy says it's all clear, gives him the big thumbs up, head on in. Trenton suggests to her family that they move, but her dad says it's impossible. She hears something outside and goes to look and sees a car driving away. And Mobley gets home and starts packing when the FBI knocks on his door.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
This was very tense.
It was. Because we still weren't sure. Like, are they actually investigating?
Sure.
Like, how closely are they surveilling these people?
The show asks you to join them in their paranoia. And for me, it worked.
Yeah.
And the music was effective building up tension and... Just, you know, like, just how stressful, like, you don't, when I'm extrapolating because I've never been wanted for a major crime. But I imagine, like, you know, it's kind of like if you watch a scary movie. All the houses your sound makes, everything goes bump mm-hmm. in the night that you never notice on an average night, suddenly you're paying attention to it. And I imagine if you're wanted for something like this, it's even a worse sense of, like, oh, shit, what was that?
Right.
Has that car always been there? Is that a normal amount of black fans parked on my street? You know? is that an acceptable number of black vans? Flower delivery trucks?
What is the acceptable number in your mind?
I think zero.
Okay, good.
One, maybe. If there's two identical black SUVs in your street, something's going down. I'm not sure if it's drugs, not sure if it's CIA, I'm not sure if it's mm-hmm. FBI, but if there's any heat on you, get the fuck out.
Right.
Get the fuck, pull a Matthew McConaughey and True Detective and just wind your way through the projects until you're free.
Question for you. So we know Mobley gets picked up. Do you think Trenton's actually under surveillance at this point? Or is she just buying into the paranoia of Mobley?
I think she's under super surveillance and she's Muslim.
Oh, God. Yeah, she does have some things working against her. Like, I don't want to say anything bad about it.
Whatever trouble Darlene's in, she's in double trouble. No, I don't know. I don't know because... I
just don't know how on to F society they are.
Reason they're on to Mobley is because of the fucking poster.
Right.
Which is why he eventually says, because he hears everything they got against him and realizes that they don't got shit.
All they have is this flyer and a MySpace page from 2003.
Right. I'm DJ Mobley. I was booked for this party. What do you want? You know?
Yeah.
I'm a big fan. There's just scant evidence. And even the FBI says, like, look, this is a Hail Mary, and it got intercepted, mm-hmm. so...
Yeah, I think Trenton actually isn't under surveillance yet. Okay. I don't think there's any reason for them to be looking at her yet.
Well, so FBI surveillance or Dark Army surveillance? Because FBI. Didn't she go with Darlene to one of the meetings with the...
I can't remember.
I saw some people asserting the fact that she somehow was with Darlene when she made... And plus, you know, Cisco knows about her. So, sure, like, she's definitely... I mean, the Dark Army is the main threat for her.
Yeah, definitely could be there. But, yeah, the FBI I don't think is on her yet.
Okay. But how would they be on the Romero? I mean, that's the thing is, like, if, you know...
His weed operation.
That's what I'm saying. Like,
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Obviously, the FBI knows a lot more about this shit than we do. I mean, they put this Andre guy on Darlene.
On Angela?
I don't know why I get those confused. But yeah, they put the FBI guy on Angela a long time ago in the first episode.
But I feel like that was part of the AllSafe investigation, right? Like, this happened at AllSafe. Angela conspicuously left AllSafe a couple of weeks before this.
But what I'm saying is, like, who knows what they had on Romero or I don't think that the fact that but if she had something more, you'd think in this instance she would use it.
Mm-hmm.
Because Mobley saw through this and was like, nah, fuck it, I want my lawyer. So, I don't know.
Maybe they don't actually they have to have something on Romero.
Well, I mean, he was killed. That's what they have on him.
Right, but why do they connect him to Mobley?
Because I don't know, they connect...
They do in this episode. She mentions your friend died.
Yeah.
How...
Is that just
how
a stab
do they
in
know
the dark?
That if they're...
Because that's what I when Mobley was just stone facing her, but he let his eyes fall when she says, "You do know your friend." I'm like, "Ah, shit, maybe you shouldn't have given her that."
Right.
But I don't know.
Like, we're probably missing something.
Romero's got a weed operation. He got shot, and his mm-hmm. computers are rigged to explode when you plug him. I mean, I guess that's kind of
suspicious, but it doesn't connect him directly to
also,
F society
I feel
or
like
Mobley.
A smart drug dealer would do that.
Sure.
Like that doesn't necessarily imply black hat hacker.
No, of course not. So, yeah, there's probably something in season one that we're just not remembering, or beginning of season two.
Possibly.
Wait. Yeah.
Don't tell me.
Fucking obviously. Of course. She goes to visit his mom. She talks to his mom, and she finds that code.
Okay. But that doesn't pin her to Mobley.
Doesn't she find the flyer in his box as well?
Yeah, but that ties Romero. It doesn't say anything about Mobley.
Right. I'm trying to figure out how they tied Romero to Mobley.
Okay. Well, how they tied the 5-9 thing to Romero.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, man. That ties it. Butchering this whole fucking thing.
Yeah, what are you going to do? Fix it in editing.
No, not going to happen.
Oh, not even to protect their reputation?
No, definitely not.
What reputation?
Well, we have the reputation we have, and it's one for, you know, a little seat of the pants here.
All right.
At the Bald Move headquarters. So Dom interrogates Mobley, and she goes on and on about his friend Romero, DJ Mobley, Tyrell Wellick. He executes proper Bald Move policy, police protocols here, yep, by saying just one word, lawyer. And he also drank a full 12-pack of Diet Coke.
He was there all night.
He was.
What are you supposed to do? He had eaten full pizzas.
No, he didn't. He didn't get those pizzas, man.
How do you know?
The guy says, look, there's someone else's deliveries. I gotta take them.
But then they cut it. I feel like Mobley just like lowers his voice and octave and says, I need those pizzas. Whoa. He got at least one pizza. So he muscled down at least one large pizza, maybe two. That leaves a man with some thirst.
You're right.
You got to wash that shit down.
You're right. That delivery didn't have like a 2-liter of Diet Coke or anything.
No. He probably had it in his fridge. He probably had some Code Red in his fridge.
Yeah. I bet he got the cinnamon sticks too. Mm. I bet he got the dippers.
He got the stuffed crust that had the cheese cinnamon dippers right into it. Right built into it.
Yeah. So good on him. I was thoroughly impressed with his technique.
Yes.
In this scene.
Yep. Maybe show a little less emotion when you're talking about Romero. Don't give him anything, but.
Yeah. I'll cut him some slack there.
You're a human being. And also, the fact that he's doing this in the face of FBI investigators, like, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Like, I imagine that's your little Mobley heart's beating 165 beats a minute, mm-hmm, which it probably hasn't done since, like, gym class in seventh grade. So, the fact that he held it together at all is pretty impressive.
Yeah. So Dom's boss is worried about how it's going to look, that they're holding Mobley for so long after the leak of the Operation Berenstain. Mm-hmm. So he tells her to release him.
We said that the assistant director of the FBI, the head of cybersecurity, and one other position is getting fired. Like, everybody except for the actual director, because, of course.
Which we know that's not true. That shit doesn't happen. The leaks come out. Nobody gets fired. Nothing changes.
No, I feel like, down people always get. It's always, you know, there's someone to fall on the sword. There's three people here. But where does this fit in with her boss being dirty? Because we know that he's always been trying to throw her off the investigation. We know that, mm-hmm, he was conspicuously absent during the attack. Happened to be up in his room. Right. Now he's shutting this down. Although, there's also good reasons for all this.
I buy,
like,
his
everything he
here
says has like a, okay, that makes sense kind of reason.
Right. Let's just say it's yet another piece of evidence on,
yes,
on the scales here.
Okay. Because at some point, it's all smoke, no fire, but the quantity of smoke implies the fire.
Right.
So, like, at some point, this guy's being a bit obtuse. I don't know if we've hit there yet. And again, the fact that he wasn't in the ballroom during the assassination attempt,
yeah,
is a bit suspect.
I don't know that I'm prepared to say he's dirty yet.
I'm not either.
But it's getting there.
He's looking dingier.
Yeah, I've got my eye on him. So once he's released, Mobley texts Trenton to tell her that they're burnt and they need to meet at the place where they first met, which is Ron's Coffee,
mm-hmm,
and then ditches his phone. Trenton gets a text and leaves her house. They're using some kind of temporary burn after reading messenger service
Snapchat,
here.
Snapchat, essentially. Yeah.
Essentially Snapchat for text, I guess.
I hope it's like higher tech than that, but sure.
Yeah.
Snapchat's the worst.
I hope it's end-to-end encryption. I hope it's just...
Pretty cool idea. He sends the, you know, the burn after reading message and wipes his phone, leaves it with the courier, and, mm-hmm, fucks off.
Yeah, right. That's the other thing he does. He just resets his phone. Completely wipes everything from
it. That seems all pretty
it
smart.
Yeah. So the guy that was dating Angela turns out to be working with Dom. He thinks he's losing Angela and doesn't want to continue dating her because, you know, he doesn't really like her and he's been put up to
it. Kind of got hurt.
He got too deep
in the game, got burnt.
Also, he's got nothing on her.
And she's just an old dude.
Yeah, I think she's just an old dude. That was a great line.
Plus, I just love this. Like, he's like, you guys look like fools. This shit's worse than Snowden. And then Snowden, uh-huh, comes in and they steal a quote from an interview and make it seem like it's about Mr. Robot. It's pretty cool.
And they straight up do some voiceover work as Obama in this episode.
I thought that they just stitched that together. Like, they've done that before.
You can, well, you can see that he's clearly saying ISIS when he says F Society. What I mean is, like, the audio there is clearly, it's got to be someone doing
an
Obama
impression. Yes, you're
right,
because Obama's never said F Society in his life.
Right, right. So they did some really clever editing here.
Right.
And maybe some voiceover work, but I thought it was really good. Darlene wakes up in Cisco's bed. He's taking a shower. Wait. So Dom in this scene is also kind of unpacking this video file of the F Society leak.
The leak, yeah.
Do you think there's anything there? Like, she's got a lot of commands up there. I think she's searching for metadata on the file to see if she can trace it back to anything.
Smart,
a location,
sure.
A camera, whatever.
Sure.
But it's not there. So I think that's what's going on here.
They're at least that smart.
Yeah. Darlene wakes up in Cisco's bed. He's taking a shower. His computer's open, and she hacks it? Or does she know his password?
I think she just guesses his password.
Flat out guesses his password?
She also, there was a plot point last season that she jacked his IRC account to directly communicate to the Dark Army.
Right.
So, like, I feel like he's... I feel like he's just a bit the dumbest person in both of these circles, the Dark Army and F
Society. Oh, I agree. Yeah.
But yet he also has these crazy connections to the Dark Army, which doesn't make sense. Like, you wouldn't think that they would traffic in fools.
Well, maybe he's just a pawn.
Maybe
they need a patsy.
Maybe
they need that guy.
I don't know. It just seems like that's pretty... You know, pretty dangerous, but...
She finds a picture of her sleeping, which is kind of creepy, and a message exchange in Chinese that says, basically, she's under his control.
Yep.
Like, he's got things handled.
And people question whether she knows Chinese. We do know that she knows Chinese, because we saw her talking to the Dark Army last year, so...
When she...
I don't know how she reads...
Cisco's account, right?
I don't know how she reads and speaks Chinese, but she does. So, because people are like, well, just because we saw the subtitles, but... If she couldn't read them, we wouldn't get them subtitled.
Right.
I mean, that's kind of like language of cinema, but we also know from previous experience she can. So, everybody calm down about that.
And then
Stage two, backdoor's in play. The femtocell's got a backdoor.
Right.
And stage two's about to begin. What the fuck?
I thought stage two began a long time ago.
I did too.
But it
does track, because it seems like every time the White Rose or Zhang talks to somebody, they're like in a debate about when it should begin.
And I guess it did begin with the femtocell, with that stuff.
Whatever they did to it, yeah.
Yeah, so I guess it has already begun.
Right.
But yeah, I'm interested to see what their plan is here. Trenton texts Mobley because he's 2 hours late for the meeting. The door to the coffee shop opens, but we don't see who it is. Any ideas?
It's Tony Soprano.
Right.
Wearing a members-only jacket.
Uh-huh.
I know. Do you think, is Mobley dead, or is Mobley picked up by
He could be dead.
He's not picked up by the FBI, but, you know, the first thing I thought is when they, like, the FBI released him in less than 12 hours, that must look incredibly bad.
Oh, yeah, to the Dark Army, who's already suspicious. And
yeah.
And we've, you know, been told time and time again, if the Dark Army even thinks that the FBI is onto you, they're going to kill you.
Right. They pick you up and they hold you for 12 hours and they street you immediately. That's going to look like you sang.
This is you some Breaking Bad shit, right?
Yeah, like, no, seriously. That's been like, after all the years of watching all this true crime shit, I just know that that's not a good look.
No, it's not.
It's not a good look, and the cops, sometimes they use that to their advantage, but in this case, I think it's just going to be... I think Mobley's either dead or being tortured by the Dark Army at this point.
Yeah, I'm with you. And then Cisco gets out of the shower and finds his computer smashed on the ground, and Darlene bashes him in the head with a bat.
Yeah.
Is Cisco dead?
I mean... So it seems like television...
Is Elliot dead? We didn't see him this episode.
Television and movies drastically underplay how just traumatic having a baseball bat taken to your head is. Like, that's a lethal attack, and it's a lot of times like a stunt. It's portrayed as a stunt attack. I mean, unless you think that she choked up on it, or I know. I feel like anytime I see a guy take a bat to the head, that's probably, especially since if he's not the fucking Rock, and this isn't like the Expendables or fucking Fast and Furious, I think you're probably dead.
Yeah.
Or will die without medical treatment.
Sure. Oh, sure. Definitely. I think I agree with you. I think Sisko might be dead because she's just come off the back of murdering someone else.
And where else is the, like, she, I mean, that was like her, like, I didn't know I was capable of this. Now I do. You fucked me. You were, I mean, what do you think is going to happen to me with the Dark Army? You know, like, I do. And plus, Sisko's a fool. He's kind of ran, like, what good is he at this point?
Yeah. I don't know how this plays out. If she kills Sisko, the Dark Army is definitely coming after her, right?
Well, but the Dark Army is already coming after her. I mean, that was the whole subtext about her pick. I mean, he's essentially proving to them that she's in his custody.
Right.
Like, I'm thinking if I was Darlene, I'd think the Dark Army would be heading over there pretty quick. Like, I think so?
Okay.
I mean, I think the Dark Army's the type that would roll up and kill them both.
Yeah, could be.
So...
I thought he was more trying to... just let them know that she's not a problem and that they're still cool on this end. But I don't know if they need Darlene anymore. I don't know, like, for stage two.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I don't think the Dark Army needs a damn thing. I think they, whatever they needed, the ended when they got the back door put in that femto cell.
Right.
So I don't know. It's ambiguous enough that, you know, obviously it's kind of a bit of a cliffhanger, so we'll have to see. But I think she's dead. He's dead, and that she's going to be on the lam.
Man, can you imagine when...
It's her and Trenton. It's Thelma and Louise.
Elliot's going to come back, and he's going to say, what happened to F Society while I was gone?
It's like that time in the community when Donald Glover went to get pizza, and he came back, and his apartment was on fire.
Sure.
Everybody, if you haven't seen Community, you've at least seen the gif of Donald Glover walking in and his apartment's on fire. That's going to be Elliot when he gets back.
Yeah. Darlene's got a lot of explaining to do.
But that's the thing. Like, it's interesting. If you buy the theory that Mr. Robot killed Tyrell, then there's a lot of really interesting similarities between Darlene and him. And him, brother and sister, and they've both done this thing. And, like, you know, Mr. Robot... or Elliot did it under auspices of his Mr. Robot construct, but still, that's pretty interesting. Pretty cool.
Yeah. Sure, but ultimately, I like this episode with a couple of glaring exceptions.
All right. I don't think there's as glaring for me as you, but right. I feel you. Hey, I think we've been remiss in not mentioning this on the Mr. Robot podcast, a 2-bit encryption podcast. Sorry. Got to maintain branding. but we're going to be making an appearance at the Rocket City NerdCon. You can find that information about that at rocketcitynerdcon.com. It's August 22nd and the 23rd. You can get tickets for the whole weekend for $25 or per day at $15. We'll be hosting multiple panels, and one on podcasting, one on the various meta effects of adapting comic books and novels into television shows and movies. And also a little fun thing where we're going to dress up and invite people on stage to pretend to be Freys and Starks and try to kill each other with fabulous games and prizes. We'll also be running a booth the whole weekend where you can come and get some merch and I don't know, high five us.
Sure.
Invent elaborate handshakes, fist bumps and whatnot. Just touch us as much as possible because, you know... cons and touching and disease, that's all one big stew we're going for. But go to rocketcitynerdcon.com. You can follow them on Facebook and Twitter and the website itself to register for the events, and hope to see you down in Huntsville this October. Hey, I'm here to tell you how to support Bald Move, and that's important. Stop. No, don't fast forward yet. I have something to say. How many people do you personally know that watch Mr. Robot?
Oh, one.
The correct answer is it doesn't matter, because, you know, Jim and I, we watch Mr. Robot. We're here to talk to you about it every week. We're your best for your cool friends that aren't down with Mr. Robot in your home life and in your work life and in your play life. We're always there for you. You can depend on us. If you get that kind of enjoyment, if you get that kind of virtual water cooler from us, maybe think about enabling us by going to club.baldmove.com. Because the reality is we probably wouldn't be doing a Mr. Robot podcast were we not able to do this on a full-time basis. And for just as little as $1 a month, you can sign up, help support us, get a whole bunch of fantastic bonus features, including ad-free feeds and VIP forums and exclusive bonus club member-only content. And again, it's easy. Go to club.baldmove.com or if you don't want to do that, there's a Bitcoin cold storage, or like we like to call it, Amazon. Amazon.baldmove.com. It's free money. It's like, you know, it's literally like murdering a lawyer and taking her Bitcoins. You use Amazon.baldmove.com. That money, it comes from nowhere. It's just you shop and you pay the exact same price to get all the same shit, but somehow money comes into our hands. It's very sketchy and weird.
Is this one of those like
Mr. Robot-y, but it works.
So such a good deal you can't afford not to do it sort of thing.
Yeah, you would be a fool if you're shipping if you're buying on Amazon and you're not using amazon.baldmove.com, cuz then you just hate Bald Move. And if you hate Bald Move, right, why are you listening to us? Do people hate listen to a podcast? I mean, I guess. So for you people, you know, fuck off. Everybody else, amazon.baldmove.com.
Okay, that's it. Do we have some feedback?
Oh, do we? Do we ever? Robbie says, Joanne, by the way, robot@baldmove.com if you want to get in on this party, where you can go discuss episode by episode with your fellow fans at forums.baldmove.com. Robbie says, this was the jaw-dropping theory of the week. I got this by about 12 people sent in. It was a buzz on Reddit. We've wondered, what is Joanna doing with her boy toy? Robbie's theory, Joanna is framing her new boyfriend for the murder of Sharon Knowles. In episode 1, or season 1, episode 7, we see her encouraging Tyrell before she goes to meet Sharon and ultimately kills her. And that's true. Like, it's ambiguous, but Joanna puts her hand on his face and says, steady, before he goes off to kill her. I've always debated about whether she agreed or, you know, whatever with that approach. But if you buy that scene by that interpretation, then she's kind of with him on killing it. Either way, we now see in season 2 how specific she is about having her new boyfriend choke her. In season 2, episode 7, we see her violently choke, which leads to bruising on her neck. The killing of Sharon Knowles seems to be her plan, or a plan she is encouraging Tyrell to carry out. Could Tyrell be missing until Joanna has enough evidence to frame Derek, her new boyfriend? The other piece of evidence that we are given is in season 2, episode 7, Derek and Joanna talk about their first meeting being at an E-Corp party, which implies that Derek could have had access to Sharon since he, you know, is somehow connected to E-Corp. Mm-hmm. Joanna could have photographic proof that he choked her. I think the only piece missing is how she could frame a motive for Derek to kill Shannon. He wants to know, right, what our ideas are about the... what do we think about this theory? So just to break it down, because this is kind of convoluted, Joanna is having this guy choke her so that she can later claim that this guy is choking women connected to E-Corp, and it's got his kind of like his motive, and she can frame him for the murder of Sharon, which would exonerate Tyrell, and then eventually he could come back, I guess. Another interpretation, because I saw some people take this theory and say, wouldn't it be cool if she doesn't really give a shit about Tyrell? This is just all about getting her money back. You know, like if she can prove that someone else killed her, then she can get Tyrell's death benefits, you know, no problem. What do you think? How does this strike you?
I mean, there's, like he mentions, there's the obvious problem of motive. This bartender has no reason to kill Sharon Knowles.
Yeah, but could you invent one?
He
was jealous of these, because I don't know. I need to know his I need to know his position at E Corp. Someone suggested
he's a bartender. Yeah. He's not at E Corp. I think he was bartending at that party.
Well, a lot of people thought, and actually some people thought that there was actually a picture of him in the background. No one can find evidence that he was at that party, because if he was at that party, then you could just have some kind of crazy serial killer.
It's still circumstantial, but it's not that there is no motive,
right?
I don't know how you manufacture a motive, because it's not like this was a jealous lover situation. And he killed Tyrell. It's like,
yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, this is, I don't know. I mean,
I'd have a hard time buying it on a jury, given what we know right now.
We still have four episodes of her to do weird shit.
Right.
And we're only getting half
that. That could be where it's going, though.
Because else, you know, she I don't know. Because the other thing is, like, why would she marry this dude if she's going to frame him for murder?
Right.
But But I do like the fact, because it does make sense, a little bit of sense of what she's trying to do with this guy. This, his ineffectual choking and why she's fascinated with him at all. I like the basics of the theory. I think there's some definite bones that maybe some meat can be hung on for too long. So thanks, Rob. And like I said, I had about a dozen people submit variations of that.
She was also into the rough, kinky bedtime stuff before that. True. So it could just be that that's what she's into.
That's true.
There's nothing... nothing going on about framing.
That is also plausible. Liz G says, your commentator from Iceland reminded me of an article I read earlier this season. Esmail had overheard the actors who played Joanna and Tyrell speaking to one another in Danish and Swedish and wrote it into the show.
Ah.
So we had a theory about, like, maybe he rolled in all this weird covert hostility brotherhood into it. This is from a Vulture article. Apparently, no. This was just a happy... I mean, the fact that enriched the story. This is like we always said about Gilligan, right? Like, right. Yeah, he's a genius, but not on the level that we were treating him at the end. Like we were
it's
giving
not
him
a
credit
mastermind
for
kind of genius.
Yeah.
It's more like,
well, I wouldn't even deny him that, but like he meant 75% of it. 25% was just Reddit going fucking crazy.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. Like, you saw the famous picture of like them at Gardetto's
or and Gardenios, yeah.
Gardenios, where like they. So someone had like scribbled all over the seed and like
circled everything,
yeah,
with arrows
and
text.
Showing Walt's like the yellow or the blue napkin represents meth, and the yellowed mustard bottle represents his family. Notice that his eyes are focused on the meth. Like,
right.
It was a parody of what we had become on the Breaking Bad subreddit.
And they're doing that here with pacemakers
and
all sorts of
shit. And they did it with True Detective. We do it with The Leftovers. It's part of the fun,
you know,
man.
You have to be wrong sometimes.
Yes.
You have to dig deep enough to find the truth that is, in fact, hidden. And that's going to mean that you're wrong occasionally.
Because you know, he doesn't intend everything that's on the screen.
Yeah.
Like, that's I feel like I finally realized that with Breaking Bad and True Detective, that some things are just accidents. Happy accidents, but nevertheless. Nick from Pasadena. On your last episode, you spent some time talking about what exactly the Dark Army had done to the Femto Cell that they had provided the FBI hack plan. I suspect the Femto Cell contains a bomb. In keeping with their deadly...
A
literal bomb. Not a logic bomb. Not a zip bomb. I suspect that Femto Cell contains a bomb. In keeping with their deadly force against the FBI in China to disrupt the investigation and cover their tracks, the Dark Army is ready to blow up the entire FBI team investigating them to sow chaos and ensure they don't get caught.
They didn't do it.
Well, but Phase 2 is about to go into effect.
Yeah, but the FBI vacated that floor.
Have they already?
They were only going to be there for another day.
Yeah, and they weren't there.
And they were in a different office this time. Yeah, they're gone. They're long gone. There's no bomb. Sorry.
Okay,
sorry,
Nick.
To shit on your email, but it's too late for the bomb theory.
Okay, Nick. I thought it was interesting. But to be fair to Nick, he sent that before the episode aired.
Right,
so.
Right.
Anyway, Mitchin, can we definitively say that everything in this episode actually happened? No Elliot means this is all real, right? Mm-hmm. I feel like we've been waiting for this type of grounding episode, especially after Full House Vision, which I loved. Yes, I
100%.
Think if later I find out that Darlene's also disassociating and that her Angela are the same person, then that might be
and
a no.
And Mobley's done so much acid during his EDM shows that he can't even see
straight anymore. Mobley and Trenton are the same
anymore.
Person.
Right.
Just different figments of their imagination.
No, 100% real. Everything.
We've never seen Mobley
week.
With a family. Maybe Trenton's a real person and Mobley is her Mr. Robot.
Pizza Hut is his family. The Pizza Hut employees.
The delivery guy.
Yep.
I may be alone on this, Mitch continues, but I'd really love to see more of Dom and her investigating. This would really be great universe for a Monster of the Week style show where Dom cracks down on cyber attacks. I'm assuming the other hackers and groups are taking advantage of the unrest caused by the Dark Army / F Society. So that would be kind of cool. That's almost like The Wire, where we see both sides of it and the missteps and mistakes and the paranoia and how it fuels both sides. We're not really getting that with Dom, but hardly any shows really pull that off successfully.
Yeah.
They essentially play both sides with the cards up on the table and like, you know, you got this omniscient view and.
Right. I like that.
I like it too, but I think the season would be twice as long and
yeah.
doubly as dense.
I think you'd have some unrest in the fan ranks if you tried to go like monster of the week sort of thing.
Well,
in this show, because that's definitely not what the show is.
Yeah, but I think monster of the week is kind of like you think that maybe she they shoot it in such a way that like you think that she's hot on the heels of, you know, the F Society, but right. then when she actually makes the bust, you see that it's instead of Mobley,
it's actually a mole Trent, man just some, who's eating livers.
Right, it's a leech living in the sewers.
Right.
That'd be cool, but I don't see how they pull it off in the rubrics of this show. And yeah. the show's mature enough that I don't think it's in its envelope. It's in its capabilities. And he also says, I don't know if this has been discussed on the cast or not, but Grace Gummer is Meryl Streep's daughter. I threw that in there because it's been 7 episodes. I cottoned onto it right away because she was an actress in the previous season of American Horror Story, the Freak Show season.
Right.
And I found that discovery too. But it is, it's one of those things where like your mind's blown, but then is it really? Because when someone says she's Meryl Streep's daughter, like in my mind, it's like, well, of course she is.
Oh my God, Meryl Streep had a daughter.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, no.
No.
No, like she's got the look, and you know the fact that she's an actor.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you think about her constantly chewing on?
It's
suckers?
Kind of annoying affectation. I don't like it.
Like, she's gonna have meth mouth if she keeps that up, right?
Yeah, yeah. Her teeth are gonna rot out of her head.
Tom G from Volkswagen says, appreciate you including the ratings discussion as part of your coverage. It's a foundational part of the big picture that I rarely choose to look up on my own. Regarding this particular show, I have an idea to help the ratings, and I wonder what you think.
Oh boy.
Hear me out. We all know that the road to rating success is paid to zombies. I think USA should fill the Mr. Robot advertising with clips of emotionless Angela with voiceovers and or text that talk about the living dead. New viewers will flock to the show, and they will never know the difference. And as a bonus, I think she kind of looks a bit like the iZombie girl.
Okay, sure.
She got that like platinum blonde hair and like the really pale skin. Now, you know, the iZombie girl's always got a wry look on her face, whereas Angela has no look that's discernible.
Right.
Period.
Right.
It's like,
I like
it's,
this.
It's
pass Angela
of a bowl
off
of tapioca
as a zombie.
Yeah, sure. I think it would work.
There's got to be some clips of her just like getting out of a chair, just like, ugh.
Yeah. Sure. She's only
some
27.
Noise
I don't know
she's making.
I'm sorry. Yeah. I don't think you start doing that till you're in your mid-30s.
31. That's when it starts. You know, the other thing that's popular and that boosts ratings is nudity. They could just go all out nudity. Game of Thrones has done it.
What do you, so there was a little meta discussion on the forums this week about how there was another show on another network. I can't remember what it was. Maybe it was Stars, but they actually had an unbleeped F word on a 10 o'clock show.
Okay, Stars is like a premium cable.
I don't know, but what do you think of the fact that we went from Breaking Bad and Mad Men being allowed one stealth F-bomb a season, essentially, or at least that's what they thought their standards and practice would let them get away with, to Mr. Robot having more stealth F-bombs than both of those shows had in their entire run.
Right.
To maybe it's not premium. I don't know where you put basic. What's the gap between basic and premium? Like those shows that are like, they're not.
You mean USA as a network?
Well, USA is not a...
They're not basic, but they're not like
premium. Like they're not Showtime, HBO. Right. No one's paying $12 a month for them, but you might have to buy the TV Lovers package.
Sure.
Like Sundance and
Second
IFC.
Second tier,
and
the B tier, the
yeah.
The I don't know what you call that.
It's not ESPN, but it's not HBO. What do you call that? It's the in between.
Yeah.
But I don't know, man. I think it's cool.
I'm fine with it. I have obviously have no problem with cursing, and I think in a lot of cases it adds to both comedy and drama and the intensity of things. I can see where like parents would get up in arms.
Well,
about
here's
it,
the
but
thing: like I know that part of it is they don't want to turn off advertisers. I think part of it is because they have a gentleman's agreement with the FCC that we'll regulate ourselves and you don't have to regulate us.
Yeah,
but. And I also know that swearing does and nudity and extreme violence does not equal quality.
Sure.
But it does allow you to tell a little bit more of a realistic, grounded, gritty adult story, I think.
Right.
So it's like it's not a guarantee of quality, but it opens up to the ways that you can tell stories. And that's why it's like I don't think the golden age of television is going anywhere, man. I think it's just going to explode. I mean, there might be a glut and fall off, but it's not. I think we're here to stay. By we, I mean the television.
As long as the FCC doesn't shut us down.
We'll see. We'll see. So Caleb Jones sends an email. You've been complaining that you don't understand this femtocell hack. And he sent me some background information, a whole bunch of links that I couldn't possibly do justice to. But did you know what a femtocell actually is?
Like what the word means?
Yes.
No.
So I think we've been thinking that it's some kind of specialized Wi-Fi device. It's actually like a miniature cell phone tower.
Okay. How is that not a specialized Wi-Fi device?
Well, because, I mean, you know, phones have, a cell phone has to connect to a cell phone tower.
Right.
It doesn't. That's why I'm saying, like, why would the FBI set their agents' phones to connect to any Wi-Fi that's open? Well, femtocell is this, like a good use for it is, like, you've got a building that has internet connection but has really shitty cell phone reception. Mm-hmm. So you hook it up, and it actually the phones see it as a cell phone tower, and then it actually routes the signals through the internet to the cell phone company. And the consequences of this is this was actually based on a real hack that was shown off in one of the hacker conventions last year, where they got this femtocell. Mm-hmm. They put in a backdoor as one of the Verizon brand things, and they were able to read people's voicemails and text messages in real time.
Yeah.
That is, I think, the fact that we're that the hack is along those lines.
Right. I think you stated the most important difference, which is the auto connect feature, because like phones are
they
set.
They have to connect to a cell phone.
They're set to connect to towers wherever you go.
Right.
You're not always going to be in range of the same tower.
Right.
You don't want to punch in a password to connect to a tower. So,
right.
That's a very good distinction to make. But ultimately, it's the same effect. You know, you don't have to know that watching the show.
Right. So yeah, they're like, you know, that's one of the things, like the Stingray system the FBI has used, where it's essentially a fake cell phone tower that they put out so they can listen to drug dealers and terrorists. And
yeah,
turns out, surprise surprise, that like local municipal police departments are just using that for fucking bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's one of those things where it's like, oh no, we'll only use this in the direst emergencies, and then suddenly it's persecuting some dude that's overpaid or behind on parking tickets.
Well, it's also this broadband solution to what I think should be a narrow band problem. Like,
well, we didn't talk about the philosophy of F Society, where they're saying, like, essentially they're a terrorist organization that this technology is caught, but their argument to the people is, but at what cost? They're violating the rights of 3 million citizens to catch us.
Right.
What, you know, is that justice? Are we comfortable with that?
Well, that's what I mean. Like, if you set up one of these things to catch the traffic of drug dealers and whatnot, well, guess what? Tom down the street from drug dealer X is also going to be connected to this thing, and you're getting all of his texts.
And you're not reading it now, but what if you want to? What if he decides to run for a politician in the future, and it turns out this data is still around? Like, that's the whole problem with private. And that's, like, the quote that Snowden gave in this episode, I thought, was, like, you know, it's like, no one says, well, why do we need free speech? Because I'm not going to say anything that people want to shut down. Like, that's ludicrous on the face of it.
Yeah.
But, like, police today, FBI agents today will say, well, what, if you got nothing to hide, then why? Well, fuck you. It's my privacy.
Right.
You know? I don't get it. Whatever. So thanks for that, Caleb. Hopefully that shed some light on it. I should have just looked up femtocell, because I thought it was just, like, a name brand of something, but it's actually... There's like the size of the fake cell phone, like picocell is another one.
Right.
It's like how big of a fake cell phone tower it is.
I guess I thought I understood it, but it makes a lot more sense when you realize it's
not like
cell
a name
tower,
brand of something. It's
not a Wi-Fi access point. Yeah.
Doug L., our lawyer friend with some musical analysis. This week featured an interesting musical cue. When Darlene is filming the F Society broadcast, a piece called The Dance Macabre begins to play in the background. This classical piece was composed by Camille Saint-Saëns, probably butchered that French name, in 1874, and there are several tidbits about it that give some clues about the dark place the show's going. First, generically, a dance macabre is an artistic genre that embraces the universality of death regardless of a person's station of life. Valor Morghulis. It seems to have been a response to the overwhelming devastation wrought in the Black Plague. Are you familiar with this artistic term?
And not the term, but I understand the concept.
Because you've seen, like, this used to be a category of work. Like, anytime, if you've seen, like, a medieval painting of, like, a bunch of skeletons dancing, that's a dance macabre. Or, like, a skeleton with the flute or beckoning people into the grave, that's a dance macabre.
Gotcha.
This particular piece of music called Dance Macabre immediately recall, I can't stop saying Danse Macabre, immediately recalls that idea and certainly tracks with F-Society's goals to bring down the great and powerful. However, the classical piece also has an accompanying story. Every Halloween night, Death appears and calls forth the dead from their graves to dance while he plays his fiddle. They then return to their graves when the rooster crows. Very Night on Bald Mountain, honestly.
I'm kind of okay with that.
Yeah?
Like dead, just dancing around and then going back to the graves the next day? Yeah. Why not?
Why one night? Well, you can't give them one night a year?
Right.
The hell?
They're dead 364 days a year.
So, as such, the music not only implicates the presence of death, but also having the past being dredged up. This is most notably reflected in the confrontation between Darlene and Susan Jacobs.
Sure.
Not only is Darlene killer, but she first monologues about how Jacob's past sins are now being visited upon her. In addition, the piece originally had lyrics, but they were ultimately scrapped and replaced with a violin piece. The lyrics tell the story of a death summoning skeletons, but focusing on two in particular who are a lustful couple. The lady skeleton is part of the nobility, and a man, and the man is a poor Cartwright, but she gives herself to him as if he was a baron. The lyrics go on to describe the king dancing among the peasants. Yet again, this reinforces the death as the great equalizer motif. Finally, and on a totally unrelated note, when Mobley exits his interview with the FBI, a Cisco truck is conspicuously behind him.
Right.
It turns right and heads away from the camera. It's a great bit of foreshadowing at the end of the episode when it turns out Cisco is indeed burned F Society and was likely planning a hasty retreat. A couple other, Cecily actually spotted that in real time. She's like, "Oh, look, a Cisco truck." It made an illegal turn. It ran through a red light.
Oh, my God.
And it's also a meat truck.
Uh-huh.
Which is, if you want to, you know, it's a truck full of dead meat that's going past a red light. Like, that kind of tells me Cisco's dead, if that was indeed intended imagery.
Right. I don't know. I guess we'll see.
The fact is, running red lights, I imagine that's a closed set. And if there's a Cisco truck there, Sam Esmail wanted it there. But then again, that's the slippery Bravo Vince slope that you can fall down.
Yeah, maybe it's a closed set. Maybe it's not. Maybe they just did some street.
You think you can just do filming shooting in a city with
people? I mean, all they were filming was one dude walking down a subway tunnel, right?
Like, that's true.
And New Yorkers, they're going to be like, yeah, what if it's a fucking camera? As long as it's not in my way while I'm walking the hot dog stand.
Right.
Then
I'm walking here. You're trying to film. I'm walking. I'm eating my hot dog. Yeah.
So, but yeah, it was rather conspicuous.
Okay.
I just didn't make the connection somehow to Cisco.
When are we going to get the thong song?
Hopefully never. Hopefully that song just is dead, is gone.
It doesn't exist in this universe.
Erased from history.
It's one of the odd things. Like, they do have the gentle massacre of the bourgeoisie, but they don't have Cisco's thong song.
Well, too much Cisco.
Liz G says, you probably get this question several times, but how long did it take you to notice that you had not seen Elliot in this episode?
Like 20 minutes.
The whole episode for me.
The whole episode?
At the end, I got, I'm like, wow, that was a pretty good episode. And Ceci said, you do realize that Elliot wasn't in it at all. And I'm like, oh, shit, you're right.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And also, it felt like a shorter episode. Like, I felt like this episode flew by.
It really did, yeah.
I
don't think it was a ton shorter. I want to say it was like 46 minutes long. Like, of actual runtime.
Right. Because it was only like an hour and a half total. Which is, or I'm sorry, hour five total.
Oh, okay.
Which is pretty short by Mr. Robot season two standards.
Yeah.
She continues, my first reaction to Darlene killing Madam Executioner is that now I'm watching a different show than the one I signed up for, and it will take me a little time to decide if that's a good thing or bad thing for me. Darlene intentionally killed the woman to keep her quiet for revenge and for some other reason I haven't thought of yet. And was that a death blow she swung right before the screen jumped to the credits of Cisco? I think yes. I don't know that I agree that it's a different show. Like, this is a show that climaxed with Elliot probably shooting, maybe killing Tyrell. And now it's towards the twilight of this season. We're seeing Darlene go down the same path with her brother. I think it feels like all of a piece.
And I think if you are a hacker, prepare to take down the entire economic order of the world, you have to be prepared for some people to die. I think if you go into that thinking, I'm just going to do this one thing and everyone will be happy.
Like the Walter White, I'm going to make a clean, safe, predictable product that performs exactly.
Right.
And, you know, none of this rough stuff type deal.
That's so naive as to be ridiculous. And I can't think that any of them thought that, except with maybe the exception of Mobley.
Question. Who killed Romero?
That's a real good question.
Possibilities.
Could be Elliot.
Could be Elliot / Mr. Robot.
I'm leaning towards Dark Army.
Could be Dark. Very possible Dark Army.
Could Tyrell? Be Darlene.
No.
If she's wiping
here's
out.
Here's the thing. I mean, if Darlene gave this fucking speech about I wasn't sure I was capable of this and this was not the first person she killed, then fuck you, Sam Esmail. So
that's fair.
I think that I'm going to lean on this being a real genuine experience that he captured on film.
Okay.
A fake genuine acting experience. What about Tyrell?
I suppose.
Tyrell's the guy doing all the wet works.
Maybe. I don't know how much they're playing with the timeline and how much I'm supposed to understand all of this in sequence.
Could it be the government-issued face man, Joanna's goon?
I don't know why she would do that.
I don't know how Tyrell, because I don't think he's seen any of that society.
No.
Yeah. Okay.
He just knows Elliot.
So it's those three. Mm-hmm. It's Elliot, Dark Army, or Tyrell. Well, but in Tyrell, we're not even...
Yeah, I don't think Tyrell, but maybe Darlene.
Why would the Dark Army? It seems like Romero is almost jumping the gun.
Or not Darlene, maybe Sisko, but he's Dark Army.
Yeah. So why kill Romero at the point that they did? If it's the Dark Army, it seems like they jumped the gun a bit.
Yeah, I do feel like they tried to lampshade it with Sisko saying, look, if they even think that the FBI is onto you.
But that's what's involved the FBI. Like, that was, and I think killing Romero was a mistake.
Yeah.
It's what brought the heat and kind of started making them make connections.
But if their goal is to bring down F Society, like if the Dark Army wants to bring down F Society,
that's not a bad
move, I guess.
But it also could be Elliot if he secretly wants to be caught. Subconsciously wants to be caught.
I suppose so,
Subconsciously wants the drama. I don't know either.
Or if he is trying to cover his tracks, like
there was a theory about maybe that Elliot killed him and that's why he was in jail, but that you're gonna be fucking in jail for a long time if you killed a dude.
Right.
Especially if you confessed.
Uh-huh.
Okay, let's move on. Gabriel D. The song Angela Sings at Karaoke, Everyone Wants to Rule the World, has some hacking pop culture significance. Did you know about this?
No.
All right, I'm going to drop some because I did.
All right.
In the movie Real Genius, which is a great geek hacker movie from the 80s, a group of hackers and college students led by teenage Val Kilmer hacks a government website satellite to fill a house with popcorn. That's literally true.
Sounds amazing. I haven't seen Real.
Oh, you haven't? Oh, well, it's fucking cool. Like, the climax of the movie is essentially they build an enormous Jiffy Pop in this rich dude's mansion. Like,
Wait. Is this the one where, like, all of the horrible dudes come in and raid a party that... No, that's
No, nothing like... This is a comedy. This is an 80s...
No, this was a comedy, the one I'm thinking
really?
Of. Yeah, like they ride motorcycles into this guy's living room. Is that Weird Science?
Maybe. Or is it one of the Revenge of the Nerds? I don't...
Yeah.
Anyway.
I saw those when I was very young.
The other thing is I haven't seen this like in a long time. Because like I know Revenge of the Nerds had some horrifying social commentary that no one... Like I've read descriptions of like, oh shit, people just like get flat out raped and stuff in this movie. And it's like played for laughs.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Before you go off and watch Real Genius, remember it's a thing of its time, and I'm not endorsing everything that happens in it. But yeah, they rig up a space, like a Star Wars-based space laser, to shoot through this guy's window from space, hit this tinfoil packet, and literally fill his mansion with popcorn. It's pretty funny.
I will endorse Val Kilmer's rockin' 80s hair, though.
Yes, and they play the Tears for Fears, this Everybody Wants to Rule the World during that scene.
This just got commissioned, actually. We're going to be doing a podcast in like 6 months' time.
For Real Genius? Nice.
So
nice.
That's why I recognize Val Kilmer's hair.
So Gabriel D. says, maybe just a fun reference, but with the significance of popcorn... in this show, do you think it's more? What do you think, Jim? Like, you know, popcorn with the gun and killing people versus popcorn space laser? You're not getting any
popcorn
of this.
Space laser. Did he kill people? Does he murder people with popcorn in that movie?
You know, you shoot a space-based laser onto some target in California.
You got to think there will be casualties.
There might be some casualties. Like, you played Command and Conquer... Right?
If you don't see it coming, shame on you.
Anytime you hear robotic voice intone orbital strike, it's not gonna be good.
Usually not gunning for your popcorn, though.
Yeah, I mean, it's like Superman's heat.
I'm at a loss here.
Okay. Well, I don't know. I thought it was an interesting connection to the movie Real Genius, which was one of the proto
is that song
hacker
in
movies.
The, yeah. Okay.
It plays over the popcorn scene.
I think that's the piece of information I was missing here.
Okay.
To connect the two. Okay, maybe.
Cherie from the UK wants to explain Angela to you.
Oh, please. Please explain Angela.
Like you guys, I found Angela hard to decipher this season, but I feel a consistent theme is her desire to be recognized. Angela constantly feels dismissed and treated as a dumb blonde by Allsafe and Terry Colby at the start of season one, by E-Corp managers who just assume she slept her way through a job, by Elliot when he butted in speaking for her at Terry Colby's meeting, by Darlene who felt excluded from her from F Society.
By her father who's been nothing but nice to her the entire fucking time and now she's berating?
By her father who laughed when she said the E-Corp respects her last episode, and by her lawyer who refused to hire her when she quit Allsafe.
Okay, we were a little past the point of no return when her father said E-Corp doesn't respect her.
Okay.
She was there to rub this shit in his face from the get-go.
All right, that's one interpretation. I'll continue with Cherie's others.
Okay.
Although he is her ultimate enemy, Price is the one person who's made her feel valued based on her competence and potential. I feel her recent frosty demeanor is her trying to shed her old undervalued self and feeding this new version would garner more respect. But it's clumsily done because it's not who she really is. The self-affirmations is her desperate attempt to drive out her fear and self-doubt. In a way, she, like Elliot, have two contrasting visions of themselves. I think she does ultimately want to take Price down, but she definitely is planning to extract revenge by herself, with no help, to prove to everyone her capability. I broadly agree, and I think that all these things, her sleeping with old dudes, her playing with Price, unconscionable treatment of her father, that these are going to track by the time we get to the end of this season, or perhaps the series. Because surely to God, you're not going to write this arguably second most important character. You're not going to write it this weird and not have any idea where you're going with it.
Okay.
Now, I don't know if it'll satisfy the likes of you. Who've
I don't think you, so. You I mean,
set,
I'm already
set her
soured
face
on it.
Hard against her.
I'm already sour on it.
You're like
the
Pharaoh of old. You're going to let your firstborn die rather than recognize the greatness that is Angela.
Yeah. Why not?
What would the equivalent of your firstborn be? Your Pika, your Raspberry Pi arcade box.
No, no, I don't really have any firstborns.
Your PlayStation,
all of my shit's expendable.
Okay,
myself.
Your frozen pierogies.
I'll never let
those
go.
I was going to say they have to have some kind of emotional significance to you by now. You've had them in your freezer so long.
Here's the problem.
Okay,
so yeah, maybe they're going somewhere with Angela. Maybe they're going to get there. And I largely agree with your analysis of the character they're trying to write here. I just think it's been really poorly done. I think she's swinging wildly between hell-bent on taking down E-Corp and mad power drunk.
Okay, but here's a question. Do you think Sam Esmail's not getting what he needs from the actress? Or do you think that he's deliberately writing and directing? Because I've come to the conclusion that he must want this to happen. This isn't one or two scenes that are blown. Like, this is...
Right.
Like, this is someone who's taken this person and said, pull back, keep pulling back, give me less. Okay, let your eyes water here in this particular line of the song. But I it's got to be a deliberate thing that he's sculpting. And does he... I mean, I don't know, because it could be that he's got, you know, Pizzolatto disease and he just thinks too highly of himself after the first season and now... You know, he's going to do it all and get all the credit and all, you know, he's a mini, like maybe this is a Mary Sue for him, but I don't believe that just yet. I do believe he knows what he's doing and he's got some talent and he's taking us down the garden path somewhere.
I believe all that, but even geniuses, even people who have extreme talent can make mistakes.
What was Villigan's mistake? Oh, I already know. Never mind.
Well, yeah.
Withdrawn. Should never ask a question you don't know the answer
to. There's at least one big one that you pointed out.
Sure.
But I think that Angela has been a mistake from the start. I think she's just been poorly written.
Hmm. Okay.
I don't think she's had this like slow descent into the temptation that I think she should have. I think what's happening here is... They're trying to do that, but they're really just oscillating between these two extremes, and it's not working for me at all.
Yeah, I hope she hasn't gone too far for you that, like, if they do pull it back, that you just... Because I know that... And the thing is, it's
it does happen.
And that's happened with me. And, like, the worst part is that it's a bias, right? So you can be on guard against it, but you're not going to prevent it, so...
Right.
But, you know, I think you're representative of the viewing audience. So if... It does seem like that's
but
a
But I'm not very
complaint.
Representative. Does it? Are people complaining about this? Because a lot of people I see are just like, oh, it's brilliant with Angela.
Well,
I love what they're doing.
I think that when I go into the Mr. Robot Reddit, there, it seems like anything that says anything but this is a brilliant show that's so 64-dimensional depth that it is pretty much quickly downloaded.
Right. I think Angela is 2-bit.
Okay. She's 2-bit. Well, she fits right in this podcast. I don't know. I definitely feel what you're saying, but I guess I'm leaning on Esmail having a plan. And yeah. I think that while I don't understand what she is doing is kind of fascinating. Like, I like watching her do what she's doing. There's some kind of, like, ethereal quality to her, and the fact that she's got this angelic name, I think that this is a temptation of the soul kind of moment that I get emotionally and thematically, even if I'm not getting it, like, factually and intellectually.
Right.
So if they bring that around to where I see what she's doing and it's awesome, then I think it's going to be very easy for me to, like, accept it, whereas I don't think it's connecting with you on the other level.
And not as much, I guess.
So if they ever do bring your head into it, it's going to be like, oh, fuck it, this wasn't worth it. So,
yeah.
That's all the feedback we got for this week.
Okay.
robot@baldmove.com if you'd like to send us more, and again forums.baldmove.com if you want to get into some discussion with your fellow fans.
Yeah,
and we'll be back next week.
We will. Until then, I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron. See you then.